The canyon opened up before him, and beyond it, the tilted plain sweeping down to the interstate. Overhead were the pinpoints of starlight and the cold white moon. He remembered looking down at the fuel level indicator and seeing that the tanks were topped up. He remembered thinking that the vehicle had a range of close to 1,000 miles, depending on how hard it was pushed. Then it hit him. For the first time in his life, freedom was within his grasp. Not the niggardly little range of choices offered up by his earth, beefy cheesy or tater cheesy, standing room on the sidewalk or in the stairwell, cremation or mass grave. This was elemental, limitless. As he'd driven through the gap in the ridge, out onto the plain, Connors had taken stock of himself. Like most of the other members of the team, he had people waiting for him on the earth side. In his case, legions of relatives he felt no kinship to, lovers he didn't love, friends whose affection depended on what he could do for them. His career as a geologist had been reduced to looking for ways to turn rock into a hamburger that poisoned people more slowly. And worst of all, there was his military service, portions of which hung around his neck like a 50-pound weight. What he'd done in the name of Five during the Consumer Rebellion would never wash away. Those selfsame deeds had probably convinced the CEOs that he should be selected to make the crossing. By the butchery he had performed, he had proved his loyalty to Five. And there was more butchery to come, an entire world to be subjugated and slaughtered. Connors was by no means a coward, but he had nothing against the people who'd attacked the launch site. Their actions didn't anger him, and they couldn't hurt him with their outdated weapons. As he exited the canyon, he realized he didn't want to catch them. Furthermore, he didn't want to have anything to do with catching them. How long would it take Five to fuck up this place? He asked himself. 100 years? 50 years? If the mission was pure bullshit, why act like it wasn't? Why play the game? Life was too precious and too short to be spent in the service of a cause you didn't believe in. When it occurred to him that he had the power to keep on going, that there was no one and nothing that could stop him from doing exactly what he wanted, it sent a chill up the back of his neck. The highway was visible as a straight line running across the plain below. No matter how torn up it was, he could traverse it in the ATV. 1,000 miles. He could lose himself forever in this wild place, and when the ATV ran out of fuel, he could walk. And when the battlesuit's power source failed, he would abandon it. Five would never find him. Who was he kidding? Five would never even look. He thought about opening the comlink and saying goodbye, but he decided against it. Why complicate things? In time they would come to understand his reasons, if they didn't already. When the gyro had landed back in the canyon, Connor started up the ATV and pulled out from under the overpass. He headed north because that was the direction of his home on the other Earth, and he was curious to see what it looked like. As he drove off, he thought, "Stick a fork in me. I am done." A second burst of laser cannon sent Ryan, Nara, Dam, and Thrillbill to their bellies on the floor of the Warlord's apartment. Succumbing to a wave of impossible heat, the windows facing the street imploded. The bolt of green screamed through the room, lancing the air 3 feet above their backs. If he could have, Ryan would have tried to rip the floor apart to escape the blistering inferno. But he couldn't move his arms or his legs. He was paralyzed by heat shock. When Ryan opened his eye, he saw that the room's front wall had a 15-foot section missing. Windows, window frames, wall studs, exterior sheathing, all were gone, and flames licked up from the sheared edges. Behind him, the opposite wall had a similar chunk taken out of it. The corridor beyond was on fire, and people were yelling. From outside, he heard different kinds of explosions. Moving closer to the breached wall, he saw the smoke trails of shoulder-fired rockets as they shot from the windows of buildings on either side of him. The missiles exploded with authority among the APCs clustered at the mouth of the ramp. The armored vehicles absorbed the direct hits and immediately returned green fire.
This is insane! What are those assholes at Mitsuki thinking of? This is going to start another global shooting war!
Take a closer look, Captain. That's not Mitsuki down there, it's Five. Now they want their boy toy back. The first place they're gonna come looking is right here. They know where I live. It would be best if we beat feet before the ground troops start piling out of those APCs. Help yourself to ordnance, as much as you can run with. We won't be coming back for more.
Brian slung the submachine gun over one shoulder and grabbed a nylon rucksack. It looked to him like all the conventional weapons fired the same round, a rimmed .40-caliber full metal jacket. He stuffed his pack with extra stick mags for the subgun and power packs for the laser rifle. In an open crate were more of the disc-shaped AP mines. He took a big handful. He also took a half dozen grens. Some were frags, some flash stun. By the time he picked up one of the laser rifles from the floor, he was seriously weighed down. Thrill Bill waited while Dam and Nara struggled into the straps of their own overstuffed rucksacks. The Warlord wasn't taking anything extra, just a pulse rifle.
Got my own pack mules outside.
They pushed out into the chaos of the hallway. A sheet of flame had crept up the walls and was licking across the ceiling. The thick smoke made it very hard to see what or who was underfoot. There were many dead, and their bodies had been ruptured by the intense heat. Thrill Bill shouted for his sec men. A half dozen stumbled forward, dazed, drenched with blood that wasn't their own.
We're evacuating the building. I'll break trail for us.
Ryan fell into step behind the Warlord. As they ran down the corridor, the throng of confused and frightened people flattened against the walls, giving them room to pass. Over the tramp of heavy boots, Ryan heard the sounds of battle raging out in the street. It was growing even more intense. Ryan called to the back of the Warlord's head.
How long can your people hold out? Until the last man falls. They know that surrender isn't an option. It's suicide.
The hallway was jolted by a terrific blast that sent the Warlord and Ryan crashing to the floor. As they pushed up to their feet, there was another grinding roar.
They've hit the main armory. We got less time than I thought.
Before he followed, Ryan looked down the hall the way they'd come. All the civilians packed along its walls were falling in behind the last of Bill's sec men, a crush of people running for their lives. The hallway before them ended in a T. Thrill Bill went left. There were open doors on either side of the corridor. Between the heads of the people standing in the hallway, Ryan could see inside the rooms. Mobs of pale, frightened faces stared back at him. About 50 yards ahead, the hallway they were in was crossed by another. As the crowd melted back to the walls and they approached the juncture, from around the corner to the right, Ryan caught flashes of bright green light, and over a multitude of screams from that direction, what sounded like bacon sizzling. Thrill Bill slowed, then stopped well short of the intersection. He waved over a sec man carrying a heavy backpack, reached inside, and took out a big handful of slap charges.
Out of the corridor! On the double!
The commands were meant to apply only to his own crew. No way could all the folks standing along the walls fit into the adjoining rooms, which were already full. The civilians watched, as did Ryan, while Thrill Bill chucked the explosives down the middle of the hall, scattering them all the way to the crossing.
Move!
Ryan, Dam, and Nara forced their way through one of the open doorways. As the one-eyed man wedged himself into the packed room, the unlucky souls in the hall behind him realized that their cause was lost and took off in a panic, running ahead of the advancing troops. Ryan looked down at the face of a little boy held by a woman, probably his mother. The kid's rosy cheeks were crusted with dirt and sores. He smiled up at Ryan. Not because he was offering hope, there was none, but because he was returning kindness, the one-eyed man smiled back. Then he heard the tramp of running boots, more screams, and he could see green light flaring down the hall outside. The Five troopers had rounded the corner and were stomping over the slap charges. Ryan could imagine the devices sticking to the soles of the soldiers' boots like great wads of chewing gum. How long would it take to realize what they'd stepped on? How long would it take to strip them off? 3 seconds? 4 seconds? The mines discharged in a tight string, rattling the walls and floor, and sending the people around Ryan staggering for balance.
Let's go!
Thrillbill's shout came from across the corridor. Ryan exited the room and stepped into a charnel house. Blood dripped from the blackened ceiling, and the floor was awash in it. The broken bodies of Five troopers and Gloomtown residents lay mingled on the floor. Their legs blown off at the hip, some of the soldiers still thrashed, shrieking behind their black helmets. There was no time, or inclination, for mercy bullets. Thrillbill jumped over the bodies, and Ryan followed, moving past the perimeter of the mine's blast zone to the join of the connecting hall. The warlord didn't pause at the corner. He threw himself across the gap. Ryan did the same,